I'm Jerry Arakawa, your president of California Library Users, and this is our business meeting, conducted prior to the lunch every convention, of course. And what I'd like to do today is to first go over our agenda and then have some self-introductions. I want to talk about our upcoming program, and we're very, very fortunate to have a speaker of considerable stature in ACB and Library Users of America. Kim Charlson will speak to us, and I'm going to talk to you a little bit about that. We're going to have the minutes. And Peter, are you here yet? Guess not. You know, we'll see if he comes, because I'd like to have a treasurer's report. I want to talk to you a little bit about my conversation with Adam Rushville. He's the LUA treasurer. So we have a number of things to go through, and we'll talk about upcoming elections in the fall. So let us begin very quickly with our self-introduction. And up here at the head table is myself, Jerry Arakawa,
and this is Debbie Berry, your recording secretary.
Okay, so what we'll do, I see there's a bunch of round tables in front of us, so the front is up here. So the closest table to the front, I don't think we have any sighted volunteers to tap you on the shoulder. Okay. Okay, well, thank you, all of you, and welcome again. We're going to move ahead swiftly here and have Debbie read the minutes from our last meeting, and then we'll proceed from there.
Okay. One thing that I wanted to say for the treasurer's report, I took the liberty of putting it in after the minutes, even though it was given at the end. But just for continuity's sake, and just because that's kind of what we're all used to, or I'm used to anyway. Okay, these are the minutes for October 30th. Here. I have 2007, but anyway, I know what I meant. the minutes... The Kahlua chapter was called to order at approximately 10:45 a.m. by President Jerry Arakawa, and all present introduced themselves. The minutes were read and approved. The treasurer's report, the ending balance as of the ending balance to date is $430. Yeah, it is small. Elections were held. Vice President Pat Wolf was elected by acclamation. Treasurer, of course, Peter, who will be treasurer forever and ever. Amen. Forever and ever. Amen. Yes, he is. And the board of director person that was elected was our Connie Bateman. Jerry reminded us that dues of $20 are due, and notices will go out to members in January that have not paid. Benefits were discussed of being a member, which included a copy of the LUA ledger, and there was some discussion about some people not receiving it, some people getting it once a year, some getting it twice a year. Jerry said that he will talk to Judy Cannon regarding this and get back to the chapter in the fall. The membership is involved in advocacy both in local and state library service, And we are one of the two state affiliates in the United States. We pay for we pay for speakers to come to our meetings to give us new innovations and information about library service, both now and in the future. Hopefully, Michael Marlin from the State Library will be able to come and speak to us in the spring. It was also discussed that downloading is very difficult and tedious for many users, including myself. And this may be talked about and explained in a little more detail and simplicity by our speaker. A lively discussion was then conducted concerning the argument of one convention per year versus two conventions. Jerry said that whenever possible, he will cast his delegate vote for our chapter in the way that that will represent the membership, but will use his discretion and judgment pending information that has not yet been received, but will be received at the Saturday meeting. Our speaker was Wendy, and I didn't get the last name, from the Fresno Library. The meeting was adjourned at approximately 11:50 a.m. Respectfully submitted, Secretary Deborah Berry.
Okay. Thank you, Debbie. Any additions or corrections to the minutes? A quick one. The speaker was Wendy Eisenberg.
Eisenberg. Thank
you. E-I-S-E-N-B-E-R-G.
I should have gotten to you about that before.
Okay. Any other additions or corrections? Then we'll entertain a motion to accept the minutes as amended. A second. Okay, we have it's been moved and seconded to accept the minutes as amended. All in favor? All in favor? All right, great. All opposed? Thanks, Debbie. I guess Peter is not here yet, so hopefully he'll show up and give us a current balance. If not, I'll definitely catch him this afternoon and relay the information to Debbie for the next minutes in the fall. First, I want to talk to you about our speaker. As I mentioned earlier, Kim Charlson will be speaking to us during the lunch, and she has a fairly ambitious talk that I asked her to talk about pending. You know, given the kinds of issues that the membership have raised. I asked her to touch on one or more of the following four issues. First, the current state of NLS, the digital download program. What's been happening with it? Any issues? Any concerns? Any problems? Whether things are going well? Where NLS is in at this level, at this juncture. Second, the general availability of accessible media in this country. That's a huge topic in and of itself, I know. But, you know, I figure if anyone can condense this and hit the highlights, Kim is uniquely qualified to do that. So I asked her to touch on the state of accessible media today. Third, I wanted her to talk about Lua and what's been happening with Library Users of America, and particularly because the issue has come up with us here in this group, what California library users means to the national organization and how our participation impacts on Lua and what they do. And fourth, you know, I wanted her to take some time to talk about her job, which she does as a state librarian, and whatever she'd like to talk about, the School for the Blind. Now, I know that she's going to be talking about that this evening, so that might be the least touched upon topic. But I asked her to take some time if she likes and do her own horn as far as what she does, because I believe she's the only visually impaired state librarian. Is that true? Yeah. So that is certainly a big deal, and we're very fortunate to have her speak to us. So those are the four general topics she's going to be discussing at our lunch. So we'll see. It's an ambitious agenda. And relative to the minutes, it was, yes. True. Very true. You're absolutely right. And well, you're right. And he's relatively new, but that's still no excuse. You're absolutely right.
Lay down.
Well, we got to give him his due.
I want to know.
Because you're right. He. Yeah. He's yeah. And speaking of Mike. I know we talked about this in the minutes, and I had asked Mike if he would address the issue of downloading. He said sure, he was prepared to do it, and he can come and talk to us anytime. When I found out that Kim Charlson was going to be here, I thought, well, maybe the membership would really like to hear from her, given her involvement with Lua and with NLS and so forth. So we have kind of a standing invite for Mike to come to talk to us, and he's I think he'll be available if we give him enough notice, and if it's a pleasure of the organization, I will certainly ask him to talk to us in the fall if he can come down. Given the situation with the state of California, though, I don't know what kind of budget he'll have for travel, but he often comes to these conventions. So if there is no objection, I will certainly talk to Mike and see if he can come for the fall and talk to us about some very, very specific kind of issues about the digital download and how to...
For the Braille Institute?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's a good. Yeah, I thought about that, and I certainly don't have any problem doing that. We can do that. My concern? Well, I really don't have a concern. I don't have any problem with Braille Institute at all. We've had Brian Albritton come to talk to us about, and he's very qualified. He does this all the time from Braille. I don't know if Mike is in a better position to talk to us in more detail about that because of his position as state librarian. Does the membership have any feeling one way or the other about this? Do you guys have a preference? Because that is true. It is, Braille Institute is right here. Well, it's not actually right here. Remember that the South Convention is in San Diego this time.
But, they're a lot closer than...
True. So, but whether Braille will participate and send someone down from Los Angeles, I don't know. Yes?
I think they probably will, just because their own San Diego branch is probably a hot ticket themselves from Braille to themselves. So I think if anything, just because it's political correctness, I don't think.
I couldn't see if they're not sending somebody.
Yes? Yes? Okay, that's
all. Maybe we could do it first. I mean, if you can't make it, then we could like Braille Institute.
Yeah, that's
sure. Okay. Now, why don't we just put it to a vote? Well, we're a small enough group. Let's first, first of all, does anyone? Let's just do a quick voice vote first. Who would like to have someone from either San Diego or LA Braille speak to him?
No.
Well, okay. Is that okay? If that sounds all right to me. Does anyone have any strong objection to that? Well, that first we ask Mike. If he cannot do it, then we will contact Braille Institute. How's that?
Okay. For Braille Institute.
Okay, well, we will. I will talk to Mike next week when I get back to work, and we'll get that ironed out. We know the dates of the convention and see if we can get that straightened out first. Okay, so we'll proceed on that, and we'll if Mike cannot do it, then we'll ask someone from San Diego or Los Angeles for help. Okay, and fortuitously, Peter is here, and he can give us our current budget.
Thank you, Jerry. Treasurer's report, California Chapter Library Uses of America for the period October 31 to April 16, 2010. Beginning balance, $430. Membership dues, we collected $300. Disbursements. CCB membership dues, $50. LUA dues, $216. Our ending balance is
$514. It's $514.
And this concludes the treasurer's report.
Okay, thank you very much. Can we get a motion to accept the treasurer's report into the record?
So moved.
Second? Good. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions?
Shake up.
Okay. So we will thank you, Peter, and we've gained a little bit of money. That's great.
Yeah.
It's very good to hear. Okay. I had talked with Adam Rushville about our membership, and this has come up. We mentioned this before because of the discrepancy in dues. As you know, LUA charges or LUA's dues structure is $12 per year, and the membership in their revise of the Constitution has voted that California library users' dues should be $20, 12 of which goes to the national organization, and we maintain the rest. Part of that, the remaining $8, is to the CCB itself, as you heard Peter mention. So, and I had talked to him before about the discrepancy in the dues. He will what he's going to be doing is to send me an email of the current paid membership, and as soon as I see that, I will probably contact any of you who have paid, and we'll talk about the additional money for Kahlua membership as well. And I've asked him also, I mentioned this before, but I'll remind him to send out in his dues request to the membership to flag California members so that they can remit a sum of $20 instead of $12. You know, this is not the first organization that's had this come up, by the way. You know, I know from personal experience that Guide Dog Users of California had the same issue with Guide Dog Users Incorporated because they have their treasure and GDC has its treasure. So often there's a lot of confusion. So I want to try to maintain very close contact with Adam, and he's very amenable. He's easy to talk to, and he's very pleased with California's participation. Just as an aside, I'll tell you that LUA's current treasury, their balance is about $11,000. And he says they have currently 88 members. So that's nationally. Unless my information is incorrect, and Gloria, who's on the national board, can correct me. I believe we're still one of two affiliates, state affiliates, the other being Texas, that are affiliated with LUA. And I believe California is still the most active in terms of membership participation. Is that your understanding, Gloria? So he's very very pleased with our participation, and so he definitely wants to work collaboratively with us. So he's been very amenable. So I just asked him to send me a current roster of individuals. I'll either ask him to send you one, Peter. Peter just mentioned he'd like to get one as well. So I'll call Adam and have Adam send one to Peter. Or if he doesn't, he doesn't do it or hasn't forgotten, I'll make sure to forward what I get. Okay. So we will get that straightened out. Speaking of membership, by the way, what all of you who have not paid to the National to re-up your membership will be good until the end of this calendar year. So if you haven't paid dues, Peter and I are always here to accept your money with open hand and open heart. So those of you who haven't paid, please see one of us, and we'll certainly relieve you of $20. Okay. So I wanted to mention also in the fall that elections will occur for three positions: president, secretary, and one board member. And that is Nancy's position. So these will be 2-year board terms, and those of you who want to run, who are contemplating running for any of these three offices, I personally would highly encourage you to apply, to submit your name, or to nominate yourself, or get someone to nominate you. If you know of anyone who is not part of the organization, whom you feel can contribute to California Library Users, talk to them. Encourage them to join, and even to run for office, because you know, the organization always needs new membership, new ideas. So please do that. But remember, those three positions will be up for election, and that's going to be a main part of our business meeting in our San Diego convention. Okay. So again, president, secretary, and 1 2-year board term. The officers also, for those of you who don't know, serve for 2-year terms as well. Okay. Any questions on that issue? There are actually 7. There is the 4 officers, that is president, vice president, secretary, treasurer, 2 board members, large, and immediate past president. So,
can I bring something about members?
Sure.
There's a project that I really enjoyed, and at one time, you know, when I was president, people enjoyed, and I don't know if it's just, you know, gone by the wayside, or if we can maybe reconstruct it in another form. And this also may let us, you know, let people know that, hey, we are out there, and it could possibly generate membership. And what I was thinking of was, you know, our sharing of books. And we tried the email approach, you know, email and phone calling me, and I would make a list and send it to the editor of the Blind Californian, and then she would put the list in the, in the Blind Californian, and that didn't work. And another idea that I had would, you know, be maybe if we could have some kind of a conference call. I don't, you know, every month or every 3 months, and people could call and discuss books. And then I would do the same, make a list of the books. And that way, we could, because that's part of, to me, that's what Library Users is too, the idea of sharing, you know, not only information about libraries, but books that we have read. And it would also, it would also hopefully generate interest, and more members would want to join. And I was wondering if anybody has any ideas, if the conference call or any other idea that we could, you know, maybe bring this back to life a little bit.
Sure.
Actually, the reason was I got contacted by one person. One person bothered to contact me, you know, and I had given my phone number, email, Maybe if I wrote a little a blurb and sent it to the Blind Californian, you know, maybe that might be an idea.
Yes, Judy's right here in the audience.
But
I kind of like the idea of a conference call.
Yeah, I did.
Where people could really talk about, and you could. There's free conference call services, right, Jerry?
Yeah. You might also put it in the Blind Californian, and I can get the book, but I also put it.
Maybe
I'm not saying that, you know, what we're doing now is wrong. I just think, you know, if we can, and I think it's great. I'm not saying that, you know, that my feelings are hurt or anything. I would just like to, you know, maybe bring it back in another form.
Right. Yeah, I would support the conference call concept. You know, just publicize when the conference call is and
okay.
Give the contact information and call in.
And call in.
Well, yeah, the problem. That's an interesting idea, but you know, it's been told to me many, many times that we got one too many listservs or five too many listservs, and also a number of us do not have access to computers and won't have the same opportunity to participate. You know, I think the conference call is an excellent idea. What you might do, Debbie, is to, if you designate, let's say, the third Wednesday of every month, let's just pick a, once it becomes a regular time that people know, if you have a number that you can publicize, you know, unfortunately these free conference call services are rapidly disappearing, and then not all of us have unlimited long distance, but you know, while they do have them, you might really consider that if you set up some regular date that everyone can become accustomed to, that might work. Yes. David, and then I think it was Mike behind you. Okay, let's have David first and then Jack.
The problem with that is, you know, people have varying tastes, and you know, if we do Lord of the Rings, and that's the book for discussion, I'm out, and you know, so would a lot of other people.
But the book club is a great idea because, yeah, maybe you're not interested, but I'm not interested.
Well, no, I didn't mean that because I wasn't interested. It wasn't a good. I didn't mean that. But what I mean is, there's so many different genres.
But.
Yeah, let's have Jack first, then Peter, and then I want to make a call. Jack?
How many blind fans know about the library?
Well, it's hard to know. Is there, you know, it's very popular, but I suspect there are particularly newly blind. Well, I don't know if NLS sends out mailers, you know, because most of us here in this room are longtime library users, so we, you know, we don't get stuff for new members.
Mm-hmm.
No, you know, I think everyone here would agree that we need to look at ways to generate more interest and certainly more just information that's out there. We have to look at ways to do that. I think this organization could be a real catalyst for that. Peter?
One thing that we could do is help, you know, start out with a conference call like the concept and see what the members of the conference call want to do. You know, and we want to, you know, start talk about one book or something. But initially, I think we should start out with people talk about what books they're reading, and then let the group, you know, take control of what they want to cover.
Right. Right. And and the comment I was going to make is, you know, Debbie, I think it's a great idea. You have a real interest in it, which is great, to try to coordinate that. One of the ways you can do this is to have, you know, first, as others have suggested, find out what the group wants as far as a conference, how they would like to use this periodic, you know, conference call. One solution might be to have the Bookshare part at the beginning, you know, where people talk about interesting books that they've read, and then focus a certain period of the conference call, the latter part, when people could either opt out or participate for a particular book. And if Debbie, let's say this is not your cup of tea, you can appoint or ask someone to lead the discussion. That way, at the end, people can either participate or leave.
Yeah. Well, then you get into the point. I didn't mean to make this meeting longer, I guess, and that's kind of what I'm doing. But then you'd have to. Well, who decides on the book?
It'll be the group.
Well, the group.
Yeah.
The group.
Conference call.
Yeah. The group every the month before comes up with a group. Book.
Yeah. Right.
A lot of the stuff is going to evolve as the group grows and develops its own character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but see, we could talk in a few sentences. There wouldn't be the time constraint. And not that, like you said, not that somebody would talk for an hour about what they thought of the book, but, you know, they could say, I like this because, you know, they could go into a little detail and then go on to the next person. And
we have, I don't know how many members we have, but we have 20 or 30
Well, if we were going to do the title, though, that's, you know, I mean, we tried that, and that didn't work because I wasn't, you know, we weren't contacted.
I would agree. I would say develop it. You know, get people. You know, come up with a conference number, a code.
Right.
Start. You know, announce it as a regular feature. Pick a date. I'd say on a monthly basis. I don't know if you feel monthly or.
Do you think monthly or quarterly to start out with. Actually, I think quarterly would
okay.
be a good start.
Sounds good.
And then, you know, if people say, hey, this is cool, let's do this every month, then we can change. But, you know, I think we should evolve kind of slowly.
Yeah, okay, excellent.
Well, I mean, let the group.
A lot of this is. You could do it through the connection, through the CCB list, through the BEC,
yep.
in a number of ways. Okay. Well, very good. This is a great project. I'll be following you to see how it works. Excellent.
Okay. Thank you, everybody.
So what is the next step?
For the next step for what? Oh, well, the next step is we're going to have Debbie come up with a date, with a number, a code, you know, the conference call number, and of course you have to have a code, and announce that people who want to participate in a teleconference to either look at a way to share. But
yeah,
I'd like.
Is that all right?
Okay, it's okay with me if someone else wants to participate in it and coordinate with Debbie. Does everyone? Well, we'll have Debbie give her whatever information you want to get to.
You know, if I could have a roster, that would really help because you know, again, we tried that before and.
Yeah,
well, it's like
VRL.
Not most people don't have
that. Yeah.
Something that needs to
change. Yeah, I think that shouldn't be difficult to do. We have, you know, I can talk to Ed and see if he can coordinate that and get the memberships.
See what's on Adam's. What members he has?
Yeah. Well, my what I'll do, I should be getting something from Adam within the next couple of days because I just talked to him. He said he would email that stuff to me. So as soon as we have something, and I'll put a personal timetable myself to get this organized within the next 2 weeks.
Right.
And then I will contact Ed and we'll see if we can get rosters to everyone.
Well, how about if we start here? I will give my contact information. I'll give my phone number and my cell, my home phone, and email address, and people can contact me. You know, just to give me an idea of what would be a good day. You know, the second Wednesday, or if Wednesdays aren't good, and we could at least start from there. Right. I don't want to put it out anywhere until I have, some kind of a core group, because I don't want it to say, all right, it's going to be Wednesday, and 90% of the people, Wednesday isn't a good day. So, okay. Oh, I see. Right, okay. Okay.
Yeah, but, if you're interested in participating in it. Talking about various books that you've read, contact Debbie at Lessons. So
I put that on the connection, and maybe BRL, and I mean not BRL, the Blind Californian, and on the CCB list.
Yeah.
Okay, that's where we start. Okay.
Okay. I'm watching the time here. Well, this is a great project, I think, and we will move forward with this. I will provide a roster to all the members. We'll coordinate this with the state office. We will get the national. We'll get Lua's most current information, and then generate that. And then again, I want to remind all of you to re-up with your membership dues, and we will add that, of course, to the current list. I'm getting signals that we need to clear out of here because we want to have time for the wait staff to organize the tables. Questions, or did I hear someone wanted the floor? Okay. Well, we've had some very interesting ideas, and we'll move forward with them. Again, I look forward to having this lunch, having Kim speak to us, and we will reconvene in this very room in 20 or 25 minutes. Thank you. Hello, everyone. We're going to begin at least our introductions because we have a very full agenda, and we want to give Kim as much time as she needs. So what we're going to do is self-introductions so we know who we all are if some of us don't. We'll start at the front table here. I'm Jerry Arakawa, your president of California Library Users of America, and I thank all of you for coming. What a wonderful crowd. And let me just introduce the other two people at the table with me.
I'm Roxanne Stallings from Elster.
Hold on, Roxanne, for just a minute.
Roxanne is not at the head table. Need you think that Roxanne is sitting at the head table? She is not, but this is we're back to the head table now, and reporting live is Kim Charlson from Massachusetts. And it's a pleasure to be here, and I will tell you a little bit about myself a little later when I have the opportunity to speak to you. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Kim.
And Gloria Broderick from Pasadena, one of the National LUA board members.
Oh, now it's my turn. I'm Roxanne Stallings from Point Richmond area and the San Francisco chapter.
Bad moving on my part. Maria Mitchell, Bayview chapter, San Lorenzo.
Valerie Reese Lerman, I'm a reader advisor at the Braille and Talking Book Library, Sacramento.
Joan Groves, Berkeley, California.
Sally McGuire, Bayview chapter of Pinole.
Winifred Downing from San Francisco, and my daughter Christine McClure, who is helping somebody at the head table.
Stephen Mendelson, Sam Leandro.
Judy Wilkinson, San Leandro, and Bayview chapter.
Richard Retta, San Francisco chapter.
Gina McGoy from Alameda.
Excuse me, Peter Crockwell, president of Alameda chapter from San Pablo. Peter, microphone for you.
Daryl Wilkerson, Alameda chapter.
Preston Moses from San Pablo, also a member delegate here today, or I should say alternate delegate for Alameda chapter. There you go.
Sam Doherty from San Francisco.
And I'm Charles Dickens from the Sacramento chapter, and I'd like to say hi to Brian and Kim, and go Red Sox and go Oakland A's.
I'm Venus Dickens. Go Oakland A's.
I'm Steve Foyt, Bayview chapter alternate delegate, residing in the city of Alameda. Yeah.
I'm Marlene O'Neill. I'm president of BRLC. It's my last day of being president. Steve is now will be the president of BRLC in the fall. I live in Philadelphia because I went there for love, but I'm moving back here next year, so I'll be the Bayview chapter.
Deborah Thompson, Capital Chapter President.
Peter Corhaney, San Francisco Chapter.
Linda Perel, San Francisco Chapter President.
David Jackson, CCB Board Member, San Francisco Chapter, Vice President of Alameda Chapter.
Allison Defner, I'm from San Diego.
Evelyn Drury, San Diego area.
John Ross, Greater Pickettfield chapter, and creditor for the Bible League of California.
Okay. Brian Connors, Sacramento.
Shirley Mayfield from El Cerrito.
Marcy Knudsen, Central Coast Low Vision Council chapter.
Ron Bateman, Sacramento, California.
This is Connie Bateman, Secretary of Capital Chapter in Sacramento, and also a board member of Kahlua. And while I have the mic, Jerry gave me permission to make a brief announcement. Some of you know Barbara Messinger. She was a rehab counselor in Blind Field Services who recently passed away. We are going to have a celebration of her life from 4:15 to 5:15 today in the Presidential Suite. Room 1013. So please come. We would like as many people to be there as possible who knew her to just say a few words, share a few memories of Barbara. Thank you.
Jeffrey. Okay. I'm Jeff Tom, and just call me Lame Duck because that's what I am.
No, not today.
I'm Leslie Tom, and I am
What am I? Treasurer of the Capital Chapter from Sacramento.
And Kaiser Capital Chapter Sacramento, Go Giants and Sacramento River Cats.
Beryl Brown, Redwood Empire Chapter Treasurer, raised on the Red Sox. Go team.
Lou Scheinzel, Redwood Empire Alternate something. Delegate.
Nancy Shaw from Warner Park, Redwood Empire Chapter.
Josie Conkling, I'm the Capital Chapter, and proud to say that I've been with CCB for 43 years.
Yay. Yay. Diane Phelps from Solano County.
Anita March, first-time conventioner at a CCB convention and the newest member of the San Francisco Chapter.
David Mandel, Recording Secretary and Co-Chair Advocacy Committee of San Francisco Chapter.
Hello, I'm Glenda Castle, San Diego Chapter Delegate and also Blind Community Center, Blind Martial Arts Group. Lee.
I'm Lee Martin, San Diego Chapter, and I don't know, all the other things. And go Padres!
Katrina McCurdy from Alameda Club, secretary, and also I go way back to some of these people who were in CCB 40 years ago. I was there too, but I was gone about 30 years, so I came back just about 5 or 6 years ago. Okay, here we go.
And I'm Bill Derry from LA.
This is Debbie Berry, Recording Secretary of Glendale Burbank Chapter and also of California Library Users. And I just want to say that all of us are readers. That's why we're here. And I'm trying to organize a conference call that will meet every 3 months by phone. And we will be able to share books and titles and what we like about books or didn't like. And you'll be hearing a lot more about that in the future. And I hope many of you will participate.
Albert Contreras, San Gabriel Valley Chapter in the East Los Angeles Chapter, and I'm president of the Orientation Center alumni, and it'll be good to see some of you at our luncheon tomorrow. The new administrator for OCB will be speaking, and her name is Linda Woodbury. So it'll be good to see some of you tomorrow.
This is Rob Turner, Silicon Valley Chapter, also here representing Bookshare, if anybody has any questions.
My name is Keith Johnson, newly elected Vice President of the BRLC, member of the Glendale Burbank Area Chapter, and member of the San Gabriel Valley Chapter, and I've been a member of this organization since 1973. There you go.
Sherry Gabrielson, president of Bayview Chapter, and I'm residing in Pacheco, which is a little unincorporated town right next to Concord. In fact, my cross-the-street neighbor is Buchanan Field Airport.
Okay, that's it. Well, again, give us a hand. That's a great group. I didn't say this just to irritate you, but what I wanted to say and thought in my mind was you're actually clapping for the Los Angeles Dodgers, so thank you very much. That was my evil plan, you know. Anyway, looks like they need all the help they can get, but. Okay, well, we're very pleased to have with us today, Kim Charlson, and she has a bunch of alphabet soup behind her name, so I'm not going to even get into that. She'll tell you a lot about her background, and we're just so fortunate to have someone of her stature in the National Organized Lawyer Movement here to speak to us. And I asked her to fulfill a fairly large agenda, and let's see how much of it she can handle. She's just finished her lunch, so she's ready to go. So I want to introduce to you Kim Charlson.
Thank you.
All right. Jerry's making me talk to you while you're eating, so I hope that doesn't create indigestion or something. I thought I would tell you a little bit about how I became a blind librarian, because it's not exactly a career that 25 years ago someone might have selected. I'm very, very happy today to say that there's many more people who are blind or visually impaired in the field of library science working as librarians, which is a great thing, and technology has made that possible for all of us, and it really made it possible for me to sort of blaze what I think is a trail, and I have spent a lot of my career mentoring others to come into the field as well. So when I was in college, I had this grand and glorious idea. Don't listen to this, Jeff, but I was going to be an attorney. And I got to my senior year in college, and I said, what does the world not need? Probably another attorney. So I said, you know, maybe I can do something different. Maybe I should just, you know, you have those epiphanies sometimes when you're at a turning road, you know, crossroads, that's the word I wanted. And I said, you know, maybe I should just go get a job and really figure out what I want to do. So it just so happened that the job that I got right out of college was working at the Oregon Braille and Talking Book Library in Salem, Oregon. And I worked there for 5 years as a volunteer coordinator and book production specialist. And those were the days when we used to train narrators with a tape recorder who sat in their kitchen, and you could hear the dogs barking in the background and the birds chirping on the everything they read for you, which was always so wonderful, but not so professional. So, and I worked with the Braille transcribers, which was, you know, one dot at a time with the Perkins Brailler, training and teaching them how to Braille materials for our library collection. And it was really a fabulous experience. And as many of you know who are working and have had many jobs and many bosses as time goes by, you have some bosses who are incredibly supportive and just great to work for, really motivating. And you have other bosses where you scratch your head and you go, God, I could run this place better than this guy, you know. And I had one of those moments where I had had an incredibly supportive boss, and then she moved on somewhere else, and another person came along, and it was a he, but that isn't a reflection, because I've had many good he bosses too. So, but this particular he boss was kind of funky. I don't know. He just didn't quite get blind people, and he didn't quite get accessible formats. And, you know, I scratched my head and said, why is this guy in charge? I should be in charge, but I can't ever be in charge because I don't have a degree in library science, and I'm just not going to be able to do that. And there's no library school in Oregon, and boo-hoo, boo-hoo. And about a week later, and it probably was my boss who did this, there was a fellowship in the mid-1980s. The government had a fellowship program for students with disabilities through the Department of Education. And this was a full fellowship for people with disabilities to get a degree in library science. And it landed on my desk, and I read about it, and I said, you know, this is just too good to pass up. I should not let this go by. So I applied for the fellowship, and I won the fellowship. And it meant that I had to go to the University of North Texas in Denton, Texas, to get my degree, but it was all expenses paid, stipend, everything taken care of to get my degree. So I said, Brian, you don't mind if I go away for a year and get my degree, do you? You won't mind, right? Well, you know, as being a very supportive husband, he said that whatever you need to do is the right thing. I said, good answer. So I traveled to Denton, Texas, and I sort of felt like a fish out of water in Texas. You know, it was people talking about oil wells, and I was, you know, wondering what was going on. But I got my degree. It was a great experience. As much as I could, I specialized and tried to focus on the provision of library services for people with disabilities. There wasn't much written in the field. There wasn't much talked about. Every class, I'd bring it up, and they say, there she goes again, talking about accessible formats and services for special populations. And you know, maybe we should listen to what she has to say. So it turned out to be a good learning experience on both sides. And I went back to Oregon and worked. I took a leave of absence from there, and I worked in my old job again. And about 4 months later, I guess the word had gotten out that I had a degree, and I was approached by the director of the Perkins Braille and Talking Book Library to apply for a position as the assistant director of that library. And I thought,
wow, Massachusetts is a long way from Oregon. Should I do it? Gosh, I don't know anybody there, but I was born in Springfield. I wonder if that matters, you know? So we thought about it, and it was, oh, we should, no, we shouldn't, oh, we should, no, we shouldn't. We finally decided that it was just such a great opportunity, and there might be wonderful opportunities for Brian there as well. And we made the move. And I haven't regretted it since. It's been fabulous to be in the Boston area, to work for Perkins as an institution that's been around for 181 years, providing services to people who are blind all over the world. And I'll talk a little bit about that tonight when I speak for CCB. But 9 years ago, my boss retired, and I was hired as the director of the Perkins Braille and Talking Book Library. So that's a little bit about the travel and the course and the path I've taken to get to where I am now as the director. It had been a goal of mine to become an administrator of a Braille and Talking Book Library in this country, because there have been some blind administrators in the past, not many, but I really felt like this was kind of a new era of library science and a new time, and that blind people should be administering, whenever possible, library programs for the blind. We have a great understanding of what's required. I think we have the vision to see what could be in the future, and that isn't always the case with some people in the field. I'm very proud to say that California and Northern California, you have a good Southern California have great library services here, but you know, I'm particularly proud of the fact that the other blind administrator of a talking book program is here in Northern California with Mike Marlin at the Sacramento Library, and he's a great guy to work with. We talk often. And he's getting much more active in the American Library Association. And I had a conversation with him a couple months ago when he decided to run for the board with the board of the American Library Association, at which he is doing this year. And I really advocated for him and said, you know, you should do this. You know, I don't have time to do the ALA stuff and some of the other things that I'm working on with ACB and my job. So, you know, you go in that direction and make some change within the American Library Association, and I'll support you 100% with what you're doing. So he really is reaching out and making accessibility and diversity his key platform, and making diversity include people with disabilities. Because as we all know, there's a lot of talk about diversity in the workplace, and usually the definition you hear is, you know, people of color, gender issues, and you never hear people with disabilities and the issues that we face. So broadening that definition is something that Mike is really behind, and he's going to take that to the American Library Association and do really great things. And I did hear there's somebody in the audience from the library, so please pass on my words about Mike to Mike. That would be super. I don't know if I'll get to see him on this trip or not, but he and I are working together on a committee for the revision of the standards that govern how Braille and Talking Book libraries are administered, what the goals are, you know, how fast we should be providing service when a new patron application is processed. They're the standards by which we operate our libraries. And Mike is on that committee, and I am on that committee representing ACB. And he and I have our first meeting in Chicago in about 2 weeks, where we're going to start hammering out the new guidelines for the standards that Braille and Talking Book libraries run under. So there will be a process as we go through and revise those standards. There'll be an opportunity for LUA, the national organization, and Kahlua to take a look at those standards and to make public comment. And I would encourage you to do that, and I'll keep Jerry informed of the process and how things are going, because public comment and especially user comment as we develop these standards are critical to making them good standards. In my opinion, they have been significantly weakened over the last 10 to 15 years. And now that we've got digital technology to talk about, we need to figure that into the standards. And I think we need to make sure as users that there's the accountability and the vision for the future of looking forward at other types of emerging technologies, not just to talk about you know, what NLS does and what NLS does so well, but as a library, I think you know, Talking Book and Braille libraries need to look at what's happening around them and bring some of this other services that people are using with respect to libraries into our programs. An example of that
And California has this, and all of you have access to it, but probably don't even realize it, is access to databases. A public library has access to many, many databases that they provide to their library borrowers who have a library card. And these are just a wide range of databases on all kinds of issues with just immense amounts of information. And those databases are generally pretty accessible, pretty easy to use, and they're there for you to use, but not many people who are blind know about them. And I've been working, trying to encourage and incorporate state libraries to really get their libraries, their talking book libraries, to tell their patrons that this service is there, and maybe not just tell them, but in some ways advocate and help them understand how to use it. So that's another way. And those are examples of some of the things that I think libraries could be doing that right now they're not doing. Now, the flip side of what libraries could be doing but aren't able to do is the economic situation that we're in right now. And it's really tough for libraries right now. Some smaller sub-regional libraries have closed all across the country in the NLS network. Even threats to some regional libraries have been experienced. In the state of Ohio, for example, they used to have two regional libraries, just as you do here in California. And the one in Cincinnati was closed last July, and they merged into the Cleveland libraries. So, I mean, obviously that's a huge burden or impact on the Cleveland library to assume thousands of more patrons with very little increase in funding to make that possible. So it's a critical time for libraries. You're hearing it's a hard time for public libraries out there. Use is up tremendously because in difficult economic times, people turn to free services that are available from a public library. And so we're seeing immense increases in the demand for all types of services at public libraries in this country. So advocating for the services that you've probably all known and loved for years is your talking book and Braille library services, but don't forget about other types of libraries in your communities because they do have services to offer to you that I think, you know, you'll find very valuable. Maybe it's not a book, but it's a program or it's a database or some other kinds of things. They certainly, most public libraries also have downloadable audiobooks. One of the hats I wear through my work is I'm president of the Unabridged Consortium. California is one of the consortium members of Unabridged, which is a downloadable audiobook service that California has available, and there's 9 other talking book libraries in the United States that participate in Unabridged. And if you want to sign up, it's downloading protected WMA files, and you play them on some type of accessible MP3 player that will play protected Windows Media audio files. So this is different from Bard, which I'll talk about in a little bit. This is Unabridged, and again, it's commercially available audio files that a lot of public libraries have access to Unabridged content. Through the public library, it's known as OverDrive. So you may have heard of OverDrive. Through the consortium, we call it the Unabridged program. And so all 9 of the states that are involved in the consortium put money into it, and we buy a collection, and that's available. There's over 3,000 downloadable audio titles on Unabridged. And you can contact either Sacramento or Braille Institute to sign up for Unabridged if you're interested. All right. I am going to hopefully wrap up in enough time to take some questions from you. But, you know, Jerry gave me this assignment to talk about 5 different things, and I think it could have been a thesis paper because he had these topics like the current state of digital download program at the NLS. Well, you know, anybody who's been involved with that knows that that could probably be a couple volumes. But the probably the simplest word to say about Bard is it's wonderful. I just think Bard is fabulous. Those of you who are using it, I think, you know, we could have a fan club. It's just terrific. If you're not using it and you need some help, you know, talk to your talking book libraries. Talk to your friends. Friends are good support systems. I always encourage people, do you know anybody who's using Bard? Maybe they can give you some pointers. You can use Bard with a flash drive or a thumb drive and the new NLS player that's available. How many of you have the new NLS player? Yay! We worked hard on that player. I was on the development team for 7 years developing that machine. Let me tell you a story about what I think is one of the great features of the player, and that's the sleep button. Being able to set that timer so you don't read the whole book while you're sleeping and then have to find your place, that's fabulous. So the first iteration of a prototype machine we saw had the sleep feature, which was good, and we were testing it and pretending that we had all fallen asleep. When about 30 seconds toward the end, it says, 30 seconds remaining! So, we said, do you mind? If we fell asleep, let us stay asleep, okay? You know, so now the machine just fades out when it gets to that end of your time that you set it for. It just slowly disappears, and you don't hear it anymore. I said, you know, if they didn't have to take a sleeping pill and the machine does it, that's a good thing. So we fixed that little quirk because, you know, that would have been a little disturbing. You know, you're trying to sleep and this guy yells at you. And he was yelling, too. It was really loud. You know, you're sleeping away, and here he is. So we also had, you know, constant conversations about the power cord. Should it be in the machine and stay connected, or should it be detachable? And I actually supported that it should stay in the machine because I think that people would have started losing them, and then the libraries would have replaced all these power cords. And, you know, I left it at my mom's house when I went home for college break or whatever. So we ended up, even though some consumers said, you know, it'd be better if it was detachable. Well, that's the price you pay because you have to look at the whole audience. Now, one of the features of the machines that I never in a million years thought we would get was the little Braille markings on all the buttons. I was flabbergasted when they brought it back. I just never thought NLS would do it. We asked for it, but I had this feeling in my heart they were just going to go, no way. But they did, and I think it's great because it reinforces the importance of Braille. If you learn enough Braille to figure out what the buttons are, that's great. You know, it's promoting Braille. It's really a good thing. So one of the other things I did after the machine came out, many of you in this room probably have some kind of assistive device, and it probably comes in a case that might have been made by a company in California called Executive Products. They make fabulous cases for Braille notes and Braille senses and Victor streams and all kinds of different devices. And I talked to them, and I said, you know, NLS has this new machine out, and I think you'd be really smart if you designed a case for this machine that was as good as the other cases you make for other machines. And so a guy named Brian, who works Executive Products, said, okay, I'll give it a try. And he came back and he sent me a prototype, and I gave him some feedback on it. We worked back and forth for maybe two revision cycles. And I'm pleased to say that Executive Products and Perkins Products, the assistive product division of Perkins, are selling the new case for the new NLS digital player. And it's got, you know, Velcro, and it's got a nice flap that covers the top of the machine, and it's got a zipper pocket in that flap that'll hold two or three cartridges, a pair of headphones, and you can get access to all of the USB port, the earphones, the keys, and it comes with a short strap. It has D-rings on the side like the Braille note cases do, so you can attach either a short handle. We discovered that there are short handle people in this world and there are shoulder strap people. So when the two of us who were working on it, I worked developing the prototype with Judy Dixon at NLS. She's a short handle person, and I'm a shoulder strap person. So Brian was a smart man, and he said, I'll just include both, because he didn't know which one of us he was going to say no to. So he said, I'll just put both in, and people can choose. So that carrying case is very nice, $39.95. Again, you can get it from Executive Products or Perkins Products online. PerkinsStore.org. This is my advertising. I'll be done soon. But I think it's a great accessory. I'm all for accessories for some of the products that we use every day. Another thing that Jerry wanted me to talk about was the availability of accessible media. I told you these were like essay questions from grad school, you know. I think all of you would agree that there is so much accessible media out there, there's not enough time for us to access it all. That doesn't mean there's enough. But there are certainly vast amounts of accessible media out there, whether it's Newsline, Bookshare, NLS, RFB&D, accessible, you know, content from the internet, downloadable databases. There's just a huge quantity. I think what's really the key point and why Lua and ACB and CCB are so critical to what is going on is to make sure that we still continue to have accessibility with all of the growing and new technologies. A couple examples. Google Books. you know, Google is going to scan, you know, every book in the world and make it available digitally. Well, you know, we kind of know that they started off a little shaky. It wasn't, they were scanning and things were not particularly accessible. They're working hard to improve the accessibility and to make more of what they're doing accessible. There are other programs around the country that are scanning books at a pretty significant rate. The University of Michigan, Berkeley, I think. There's a lot of universities scanning content all the time. Digital archiving is big in library science. And making sure that they create digital content and archival content that is accessible, that has the text-based links behind it and isn't just an image of a page, is really important. So that's the kind of advocacy that LUA can do, that I think we try to do on the national level, and you can all certainly do that within California as well, to make sure that your state library doesn't buy databases that aren't accessible. Make sure that, that accountability is there so that you can have access to the services that are being created. You know, where are we going to go with accessible information? I mean, people ask me, where's the Talking Book Library going to go next now that, you know, we got this great digital player? What's going to be the next generation of the next generation digital book? And I really hope, and I don't think it's far off, that everybody is going to be able to have their books downloaded. That there'll be a machine that basically, you know, when we have the infrastructure and, you know, we have 3G, 4G, maybe when we've got 9G, I don't know, the globe will be digitally accessible. But someday, I'm hoping that we don't have to send cartridges in little blue boxes back and forth through the mail anymore, that we can just hit a button and program it in and send it to that person's machine, and it'll take a matter of seconds. So that's my prognostication for the future, that I really think that's doable. In fact, there's a prototype of that in New Zealand being done right now. It's hardware-based, and it's a little kludgy right now because you have to plug into your phone and do some things, but the New Zealand Library is working with about 60 people to send their books digitally to them over the phone line. They have a pretty good infrastructure in New Zealand because it's a pretty small country. You know, we're not ready for that yet in the United States. We're not where everybody has internet access. In some rural communities, they only have dial-up. I mean, contrary to what most of us think, I mean, there is dial-up out there still, and people do have it, and it's all that's available where they live. So there's a lot of work being done nationally on, you know, telecommunications access. There's a lot of components of accessibility in H.R. 3101, the Telecommunications and Video Description Accessibility Act. And that legislation, I think, is going to have a lot to do about more accessibility. I think I've really tried to stress how important I think involvement of affiliates like LUA and BRL are to the process, because users need to use their voices and they need to communicate their concerns, even if they're small things. I mean, I get requests from borrowers, you know, from everything from, I really wish that such and such a book was available in the NLS collection. And I say, okay, I'll take that information, I'll send it to NLS. NLS pays a lot of attention to a request that comes from a user through a librarian saying, this patron asked for this book. If they get one or two of those same requests, suddenly that book gets elevated to a much higher status and could potentially be produced as a digital book and available on BARD. I've had borrowers say to me, you know, I read a book a long time ago on cassette, and I really think it should be on BARD, but it's not. I say, well, tell me what it is. I'll send it in and ask them. And when I do that, it usually shows up on BARD. So don't underestimate your ability to have some influence on the system by giving your feedback and your comments to your libraries. They're there to pass that along to NLS to make those kind of changes and to consider what you have to say. And another component of that process, there is a National Collection Development Committee, and that meeting is going to be in late May. And ACB's representative is Steve Spiker from Nebraska, and he would be happy to hear from anybody who has some strong feelings about directions that the collection should have in it, that maybe they're not reflected in the collection. There's something there that you really feel should be there and isn't. That's the kind of feedback he would love to take to Washington, D.C. when he goes to that meeting. So don't hesitate to get in touch with him, either through Jerry or through me, and I'll be happy to connect you. I'd like to just again say that it's really been a pleasure to come and talk to you about libraries. I'm passionate about information access. that I really feel that as people who are blind or visually impaired, you know, we can't take our role in society unless we're informed and knowledgeable and educated people, and that requires information access and being able to get an education or stay connected with the world through our jobs, our work, our advocacy in the community. So, you know, when people need information, they need it, and it's my job to make sure that hopefully they can get it. So again, thank you, and I'd be happy to take some questions if Jerry thinks we have time.
Thank you very much. Let's give Kim a wonderful round of applause. You know, in my own defense, I must tell you that when I sent an email to Kim, I said, please, you know, I got all these ideas. I'm sure nobody can address them as well as you can. Do whatever you can. Miraculously, she's been able to touch on all of the areas that I've raised, and she's done a great job. What a wonderful presentation that was, and I'm sure all of us appreciate her presentation so much. And you know, just a quick comment. I want to take presidential prerogative here and ask her a question, and we'll pass the mic around. I'm going to say right at the outset, at 20 after 1, we're going to cut it off. So please keep your questions brief. But it occurs to me, and I always think about this, what a wonderful time it is to be a reader. When I was a kid, books used to come in these huge boxes of either Braille boxes, or which I love Braille, but or the old 33, remember the old 33 and third records, where you got these huge books, these huge boxes of records. And if you wanted a title, you may have to wait a year and a half, 2 years. There was, you know, Web Braille was never even not even imagined. These small, you know, you can keep hundreds of books in your pocket, in your shirt pocket. What a wonderful time to have access to information. Yep, the old Reader's Digest magazines in four volumes, four Braille volumes. But what I wanted to ask Ken, and again, we'll pass the mic around if I could ask Christine to help us out. Can you touch on what's the latest with the Kindle and the Sony readers?
Mm-hmm. Sure. I'll start with last summer, ACB joined a coalition called the Reading Rights Coalition, and that organization protested vehemently the release, well, not the release of the Kindle. They protested the fact that the Kindle didn't have the accessibility features that would have made it a fully accessible and usable device by blind readers. But what we really protested and took exception to was Amazon's decision in response to the complaints of the Authors Guild, to say that reading a book with text-to-speech was performance rights, and that those performance rights were not Amazon's to give away, and that the Authors Guild didn't give the right to access those. Now, if anybody could ever believe that listening to text-to-speech is a performance right, then, you know, I have property in the desert of Arizona. I'd love to sell them. You know, it's just ridiculous. I mean, who would pay to listen to text-to-speech? You know, it's just not performance. So it was pretty ridiculous, and an obvious way to try to get more money out of the consumer. Because when you use a Kindle, there are public domain books you can download on a Kindle and read with, you know, with the screen. The text on the screen gets to, I think, a maximum of 14 points. So it gets a little bit large, but not probably large enough to be effective for most low vision readers. But it did have text to speech. Not the greatest, but it had it. So ACB joined the coalition of organizations, not all of the Right to Read Coalition, but specific organizations, including NFB, ACB, and several others, in filing litigation regarding this whole issue of the Kindle and universities, specifically under Section 504, using the Kindle to access class material and content for college courses, and that would be the only way to get access to those college courses. So our case had a little bit of a shaky bump because our plaintiff was ruled as not being eligible to be a part of the litigation. But the settlement agreements that we got in it wasn't negotiated settlement, but it was a settlement of the lawsuit. And we really did well because we got those institutions, and then subsequently many other institutions followed along or led the way, particularly in the case of the LA Public Library. They were really instrumental, I think, in turning the tide kind of against public library institutions, whether that's a municipal library or a university library, using state or taxpayer funds to purchase technology that couldn't be usable by all of the individuals who would participate and take advantage of that service. So the settlements all said until the Kindle could be accessible, those programs were no longer going to use them. And that put pressure on Amazon. And I think, you know, negotiations are going well. Amazon is in development of a Kindle that is supposed to be accessible. And I haven't heard of a release date for that yet, but I'm hoping that it will be sometime this summer that we'll have a Kindle that will have full accessibility and make electronic books more accessible to all of us.
Great. Thank you very much. Here's Christine, and she'll pass the mic around again. Please keep it brief. And raise your hand, please, if you have a question.
This is a performance question. I recently discovered that NLS requires that their readers read in a certain style, and the commercial readers read with interpretation. Would you give us an explanation as to why that is and how it can be impacted maybe in a different, more commercial style of reading?
Well, I think this goes back a long way. NLS has been in the audiobook business since 1934. And for those of you who have been reading a long time, maybe not that long, but long enough to know how the narrators from 30, 40 years ago to the narrators of today have evolved a lot. But the fundamental principle of NLS's philosophy really is that the narrator is a conduit from the author to you, and that it's not the narrator's job to jazz up and interpret the book. That doesn't mean they should read it in a boring style. But I think you're seeing a little bit of a shift, because I think that the contemporary narrators of today do show a lot more style. They do more dialogue shifts. They do more characterizations. And NLS is letting more and more of that happen. Also, the other thing that has made that go a little more smoothly, and I agree. I think it's particularly good, and I've been a longtime advocate, especially with children's books. You know, you can't read a children's book as if you're reading U.S. News and World Reporter. The kid's going to turn the machine off. You've got to be engaging. You've got to be, fun. You've got to be into it. You've got to bring the kid into it. That's how they learn the love of reading. So I've really advocated in our recording studio at Perkins, we really give our narrators a lot of license with kids' books, and kids' books are sort of the frosting on the cake. When they finish narrating a really long book, we give them a kids' book and let them have a lot of fun with it, and the kids love it. So, but what you're seeing now is that NLS is buying commercial recordings. They have done some research, and it costs about the same to take a master that a commercial producer has already created, to buy that, including the number of copies they're going to distribute. So they buy the rights from the commercial publisher, and then they reformat that into the Bard format or the four-track format. And those books are popular. People like them. And we code them in our system so we can find them, because people, those are pretty much bestsellers. That's what the commercial producers are doing. But you're seeing more of that in there, and I think you're going to get more of the style that you're talking about in Talking Books as we move forward.
Okay, next.
Hands up if you have a question.
This is Josie, and I just retired a few years ago, and I'm doing a lot of reading. I am also receiving books from the public library, and I'm getting the little tiny, I think they call it player, a little
Playaway.
Remote.
Playaway.
Right, right.
It looks like a wedge of cheese.
It is so
yes.
Cool.
Yes.
My public library just gave me some not too long ago, and you've got to plug in your own little earphone.
Yep.
You guys, it's fabulous.
Playaways are really, they are fun, and you should try them at your public library if you never have.
Yes.
They are a little digital player, and the book is loaded in that player, and that's
tiny.
All. It's pretty small. But that's, it's not, you can't go back to the library and change that particular player and put a different book in it.
It's already done. It's already there.
It's just that book. If you look at a Playaway, you actually see a little miniaturized version of the cover of the print book on the case.
It's
got a little
really
screen,
cool.
And it's got a rewind to play and a fast forward button, and that's about it.
Yeah, thank you.
So it is a commercial option that's out there. they're a little spendy, but they're not any more spendy than a commercial CD book or what commercial audio tape books used to cost. So public libraries are using them quite a lot. That Libraries for the Blind, I think you're not going to see that many of them using them, because there's a couple little challenges with using them. I'd say one of the biggest is changing the battery. It's kind of hard to change, if your battery dies while you're reading it, to get into it. It's requires a little bit of work, but usually the libraries change the batteries and you don't have to worry about it. So it's worth trying, and I think you'd enjoy it if you did try it.
Hi, Kim. It's David Mandel. A quick question. Do you have any experience with an organization called Read How You Want? And I was wondering what you think of it.
Good question. Read How You Want is an organization, I think it's out of Australia. And they are, I think what they are doing is great accessibility. It has a lot to do with why they make just about anything accessible. They use synthetic speech. They have Braille formatted files. They're using technology to drive a lot of the production. It doesn't have a lot of human interface, but that doesn't mean that it isn't good content. And the reason they can do that is the copyright laws in Australia are much broader than the copyright laws in the United States. And this evening when I talk about ACB activities, I'm going to talk a little bit about international copyright activities and some work that ACB is doing that kind of falls into this, that I think is hugely important, and ACB is really making a tremendous difference in this area. But Australia is doing some groundbreaking work because they have a copyright law that is flexible. Yes, they do. Yes, they do work with American publishers. So.
Okay, I think I'm next. Maria Mitchell. I want to ask for a little clarification on the OverDrive. There seem to be several classifications when I logged on to that of different types of books. I was wondering if you could give a brief overview on that.
Sure. You're absolutely right. There are... there are not as many as there used to be, because we used to have a component of OverDrive that we dropped back in January, and that was called the School Download Library, and it had some electronic books available through it, Adobe Pocket, Mobi Pocket, some different formats that are not particularly accessible. And we dropped that part of the service because it wasn't getting used very much. But in the audiobook download part of OverDrive, or Unabridged, as it is available here in California, there are books that when you go to browse the catalog in Unabridged, you'll find the book, and then you might say place a hold. It'll say check out the book or place a hold. We have to buy every copy of the book we have, and if the both copies, for example, are out, then it's not going to say check out the book. It will only say place a hold. So you have to place a hold on it, and then you get an email notification that the book's available, and you have 48 hours to download it, or it's going to go up to everybody, whoever the next person is waiting for the book. There's also max downloads, which means those are books that we have bought from the publisher to make them basically unlimited, so anybody could download those books, and there's like 10 or 15 of those. And then we also are experimenting with some locally produced content that right now we've added a couple books from the Colorado Talking Book Library that they recorded in their studio that essentially turn into maximum unlimited download books, but the content was produced by one of our partners in the consortium. So those are some of the categories. But Unabridged does work differently than Bard, because Bard, if you find a book on Bard, there's no wait. You know, anybody can have any book anytime who's licensed and has a password and a username to go onto Bard. So it's a very different kind of service.
Hello, I want to thank you for your presentation. This is Valerie Rees-Lerman, and I'm a reader advisor at the Braille and Talking Book Library in Sacramento. And just, you know, working with everything that you've talked about, I just wanted to let you know how much I appreciate your presentation, but also to let people know that we've experienced, as you'd mentioned, the budget cuts. We've had about a third of our reader advisors positions lost through attrition, and with the increased number of programs now that we're advising our customers on, we're extremely short-staffed, and I just think it's wonderful what you're doing, but I just wanted to let everybody know that we are short-staffed, and to please be patient with us. And it's been a pleasure serving you all. Thank you.
Well, and my complete understanding and hopes that things turn around at your library and in California in general, because I know times are very, very tough here. Just in closing, I want to say that I think, as you can tell, I'm pretty passionate about information access and advocacy. I do a lot of advocacy and education. educating of librarians and the field in general. And I'm very, very proud of the fact that the Perkins Braille and Talking Book Library was selected in 2009 as the Network Talking Book Library of the Year. My staff are tremendous. I feel that with the guidance and I hope leadership that I provide for them, they really have made it possible for our library to be recognized as one of the leading institutions providing this kind of service in the country. And, you know, it's my goal to keep that direction and that momentum going into the future. So good luck to California and to all of you, and enjoy the rest of the conference. Thank you.
I want to add my thanks on behalf of all of us here. It's just a quick final comment I wanted to share with regard to the way NLS is training its readers. You know, as a kid, I remember, I'm sure most of you remember the first book or you read, the first book I ever read in talking book was Henry and Beezus by Beverly Cleary, and it was read by Ken Meeker. The second book I read was The Jungle Book, read by Bert Blackwell. Two very, very different styles, and as a kid, I loved them both. Again, thank you so much, Kim, and to all of you for your great questions and your attention. And have a great conference, and we'll see you again in the fall.